Blog Talk Radio.
Rename cheese! Rename your
Welcome to the Gridiron Blitz Podcast, your weekly source for women's American football, insights, game recaps, and NFL news weekly. Subscribe on Apple and iHeart.
Is the fastest growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy to play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Night Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.
Hey guys, welcome to the Gridiron Blitz. 433 in the house, Oscar Lopez, alongside in about an hour, the Oracle of Women's Tackle Football. And that's going to be Mark Simone, a.k.a. the Backseat Coach. We're going to break down everything that happened in Canton as the Women's Football Alliance National Championships, Division Pro, Division II, and Division III all took place this past weekend. We also had the championship in Sweden as the Karlstad Crusaders once again reign supreme in Sweden. And then we'll break down everything that happened that weekend as well. Don't forget to go to the hub at facebook.com/gridironbeauties. And get the lowdown on everything that's happening in the sport, including the amazing weekend that happened in the under 18 women's championship in Canada. So if you missed it, it's right there. YouTube is your place to be. Football Canada via Football Canada on YouTube. So the amazing athletes under 18 women's championship for the women's in Canada. So you take advantage of that. We're also going forward to the IFAB Women's World Championships. And if you missed our podcast last week, we had two amazing guests, Sarah Galicia and also Tammy Moore. And so both of them are going to be going to the Team USA Championship in the IFAB World Championships over in Finland. So you can take a look at that podcast, 432, very enlightening as well. We had Holly Custis announce her retirement on 432 as well, so you can replay that right now. 16 seasons for her. It was awesome to hear about her new endeavor, which is football coaching. So it's going to be awesome. And then we also have 431. We break down everything the Nine Cup weekend. That was Camry Veal of the WNFC head coach of the Mississippi Lady Panthers. Plus, we also broke down everything that was happening in the Nine Cup finals. 430, we chat with Lindsay Cash of the LA Black Storm and Thelma Banks of the Derby City Dynamite. So you can also get that lowdown right there. And the Derby City Dynamite did not come through. They played an amazing clash. The D2 final in the WFA, probably one of the best games in terms of the championship format right now in the three-division tier moment. So shout-out to Maha Blaze. Shout-out to the Derby City Dynamite. Derby City was looking for a back-to-back championship, just like Nevada, D3, D2, but did not happen. Maha, what an amazing story there. Kimberly Santa Stevens, what an amazing job she did this year with the Mile High Blaze. And you get the lowdown right there at the hub, everything that was happening, especially the focus on the Mile High Blaze from everybody in Colorado, big press in Colorado, TV, print, and everything else. Shout out to Win Flato Donomy for an awesome finish to their season, and congratulations to her, championship owner now as well. It's a really awesome weekend in terms of the WFA. Also, ESPN2 was featured there. We had Alex Westad, Brian Sweeney, Donna Wilkinson, Lois Cook. There was just a lot of individuals involved in the success of the championship weekend. That was the Pro and Division II and Division III weekend in Canton at the Hall of Fame, Tom Benson Stadium. So really, really awesome. So we're going to kick off at 4:33 here with the talented in the first huddle. We're going to be talking to Michelle Angel as X-League 2022 has begun. We're into like week four now. They start off really hot in the first game. This game here, they faced off against the Phenom Bailey Hutchins of the Atlanta Empire. So we'll talk to Michelle about where the Austin Sound go from here in terms of a playoff format. If you want to catch her interview after the game in Georgia, you can go right there to the hub, courtesy of the X-League official Facebook page, and we'll be diving into her in terms of what it means for this season, the new unis, the format. They were missing, I believe Chris Daniels was missing, and because Chris Daniels is in Birmingham for Team USA, flag team, so that could have been a factor as well. But you did have some great, pretty good game. Cassandra Bills, obviously our own No Joke Football athlete, Anna Garza, involved there as well in terms of the Austin Sound. But it was the Empire with Ziegler and company, including the Phenom new quarterback, Bailey Hutchins, who do come out with the win in week four in the X League. So we're going to figure out where they stand right now. Also going forward, we got Denver Rush in play. We also have the LA Storm, Chicago Blitz coming back. So a lot of action in X League. We're going to keep tabs with it. Obviously, Nate Ward keeps us up to date on that as well. So, if like I said, if you guys haven't gone to the Hub, take advantage of that as well. Before we came on here, kind of a bombshell news, breaking news type mentality. The WNFC announces a market change for 2023. And if you know, if you follow the WNFC since its infancy in 2019, there have been a lot of teams come and go every offseason, and that is because of the driven motion of the leadership group of the WNFC is to have viable franchises that will appeal to investors and obviously venture capitalists. And there's no way that that's going to happen if a franchise isn't structured correctly, full season capacity of games, plus a great ownership and participation by a lot of volunteers. So that takes a lot of work internally for every franchise, and not every franchise is able to do that. And so within that time frame of the WNFC, we've seen various teams come and go on each side of the coast because of the fact that they're not able to commit to the standards that the leadership at the WNFC. And obviously, it is more of a business-minded sense. Some investors and some business venture capitalists are not going to look at a business plan, and given the fact that there's 20 teams or 17 teams, that they're not going to take this serious. So in order for them to be taken serious, the WNFC really has to set structures and guidelines and game day protocols for them to, to be viable in terms of the businesses and to have investors value their branding. So at this point, breaking news came out today. WNFC announces a market change for 2023 and a big-time NFL all-pro wide receiver. Everybody knows he's Houston ties with the Houston Texans. And that would be DeAndre Hopkins, one of the main receivers in the NFL, one of the key powerhouse owners that will be in, with the team in Houston that will replace the Houston Heat franchise as announced by the WNFC. His sister, Kesha Smith, will be also franchised. They're going to add Tarini Dash on top of that, and then Kylie Jamerson also on top of that. So we have a core group of four individuals that are going to try to make the Houston market viable for the WNFC. It is very important for the WNFC to make Houston a viable contender and a viable rival, because it is Texas Elite. It is Houston. Why not make a Texas duel every year in season? So the only way that's going to happen is obviously with strong ownership and the opportunity for really good rostering. So, if you're in Houston in terms of the market, in terms of a player right now, I mean, I'm not going to try to sell you the WNFC for whatever reason, but you already know what it's all about. They got viral network, nationwide coverage, worldwide reach. So if you're a player in, let's say in the WFA or any other league in Texas, for example, if you're a player in there, you want to play for a visible opportunity besides the X League, which has always been visible in terms of a platform or viewership. WNFC has really put it on another level with Vire Sports. So this is an invitation for you to come on to this brand new franchise and really make a name for yourself and stand out, especially when you have an owner as prestige and as a all-world wide receiver as DeAndre Hopkins is. So opportunity is there to be part of this brand new franchise that's going to launch and make the Houston market a representation for the WNFC branding. So this is huge news that just came out today. One of the things that we've stressed along the way, it's never happened in women tackle football until the early 80s, when we had the NWFL that kicked back there, and there was opportunities for it to go pro. There was opportunities for women to get paid. There's just a lot of opportunities, but it has never happened at another level like this since then. And so this is a moment in time where everybody at one point understood what it was going to take to elevate the game. So we've elevated the game in both leagues. elevated the game in the WFA with obviously being in Canton for the next 5 years, visibility by the NFL, the Patriots taking really really kind to the Boston Renegades. So there's opportunity there for both sides to exist. We have no idea what Jerry Jones might do once the WNFC or even DeAndre Hopkins gets involved with Houston. There's opportunity there for another relationship to be built through the NFL and via the NFL, especially since they played the game there. But, you know, overall, what a big, big moment here. So we won't know the details. We don't know the name of the franchise yet. We have no idea what they're going to call it. So that was one of the big moves besides the WFA weekend that was also exciting. Like I said, an amazing moment this weekend. If you didn't catch all the games, ESPN2 was the WFA pro final. Coming into this final in the pro game, we are going to have in an hour here, we're going to have WFA 2022 pro MVP Chante Bonds of the Boston Renegades to talk about that, talk about the playoffs, talk about Allison Cahill's injury, how she substituted for her for the last two games to punch in the championship, their fourth title in seven in their franchise history. So seven titles altogether, but fourth consecutive, which is an amazing feat in itself. With the international backfield that was, you know, Ruth Mata, Tuti Kissinen, and as well as Falkowski, all those came together and accumulated a win for the Boston Renegades. For the Minnesota Vixen, kind of a disappointing loss, but at the same time, it was a very successful season. They battled through all year, new rookie quarterback, also changes there. Coach McCauley also made some strides there. So Minnesota returned to a back-to-back finals appearance. So that's an impressive feat in itself. And then a lot of you know, effort that was put in. Unfortunately, in the championship game, it was not displayed in the way that the Vixen would have loved to display it. It was just basically a one-sided matchup, and it turned out to be no different than it was the year before. Unfortunately, it was not as exciting as the year before. We had no Grace Cooper, so that was a missing piece there. We did have other talented players step up, and it was a three-quarter demolition, basically one quarter of a presentation by the Vixen to just kind of not get shut out in the final. So that was not a very good showing there. But at the end of the day, they did arrive here. They did take care of their schedule. They did become the opponent of the Boston Renegades. So we're going to talk to MVP Chante Bonds in about an hour or so. Also coming into the second huddle right here is going to be Coach Claire Doerr of the Football Canada. And we're going to be talking the under-18 women's championship. We're going to talk about Manitoba Girls Football Association, the Regina Riot, the WWCFL, Team Canada in terms of what its opportunity will be in Vonta, silver medalist as well, champion in the WWCFL. So a lot of things that we can dive in to Coach Claire Doerr, who was one of the premier players in the WWCFL for a long time and now has transitioned over to get the next generation of athletes into Canada to blossom the WWCFL, but also to, you know, a breeding ground for Football Canada to get it to another level and to really strive to make sure that we got women's football in Canada and on a secure platform and really, really good. So this is basically an awesome opportunity right there for Football Canada as well. So you're looking at that for the program up there. Let me go ahead and just email here. There we go. All right, great. So we're going to be just diving in here to see if once we get Michelle Angel here in a couple minutes here, figure out, you know, where the X League, Austin Sound stands in terms of what's going to happen for their season. And it looks like, you know, that's going to be a competitive season at this point. It really is. So we're going to dive in to about with Michelle Angel here in a second as we talk to her about X-League. Go ahead and dive into the Monkey Knife Hive Huddle here.
Fight is the fastest growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy to play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Knife Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.
All right, guys, don't forget to go Monkey Knife Fight, especially for the NFL season coming up here in 3 weeks. Go Monkey Knife Fight, use our code NJF. You can get a $5 free play get the prop right, you're going to make about $15 on our own $5. So check it out. Monkey Knife Fight, use the code NJF. Let's bring in the quarterback of the Austin Sound, and that would be Michelle Angel, into the huddle here. Michelle, how's it going tonight? Thanks for making the time.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Michelle, we're just kind of reviewing with our fans since the excitement of the X-League kickoff this season. You guys kicked off a great first match there in terms of the first win. Now you go into Georgia this past weekend. Wasn't as easy as it was. Of course, you were missing Chris Daniels, some key pieces for you there. But what did you think of the young quarterback? Obviously, it's going to benefit the league as well, just like you're as talented quarterback as well. So what did you think of Bailey's performance against you guys?
Sure. So, you know, just from kind of the scouting that I do, I'm kind of an obsessive. So anybody that I'm playing, you know, whether they're on offense or defense, I'm looking them up. So, you know, I know she has a flag background, and so I know, you know, at the very least she would be accurate. I will say that I think she performed well. However, I think that her team put her in a position to be successful. You know, they set up the play actions with just pounding the rock and running stretch all night. So, you know, it wasn't a lot of pressure on her shoulders, which is exactly what you want to do with the rookie quarterback. So, you know, I think she did her job. She did exactly what she needed to do to get the win. You know, as far as their passing game or, you know, her ability to throw the ball down the field consistently and, you know, on third and long and situations like that, I do want to see more of her film. But, you know, I think she did a great job and had a great showing.
Michelle, how do you think this benefits the fans and in general? As a fan, we've seen you perform at a high level. We've seen Ashley Salerno in the past at a high level. You got Matheny in Seattle. So this is kind of nice to have a couple of new quarterbacks kind of come into the fold for the league, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. I love it. I mean, there's 10 and 12, 13-year-olds that I'm looking at, you know, just in awe at their footwork and their fundamentals just because they started so early. And I think, you know, she's a part of one of those in that younger group. That's going to be very, very successful just from getting a fundamental base at a much younger age. You know, I didn't start until I was about 20 years old. And so at the very least, if she started playing yesterday, you know, she's years ahead of me. So I think it's great. This is exactly what we wanted, especially in a position that's, you know, more skilled physically and mentally. It's difficult to find those up-and-coming players, you know, in a sport that's trying to grow. So, you know, I love it, and I think it's great for the sport, and they're getting younger and younger every year.
Now, for you, you're in Texas, and I think flag is huge in Texas, so there's opportunity, and you probably get to see a lot of talent stuff around you, especially in Austin and pretty much up and down Texas. So that's an exciting moment, I think, in terms of just of recruiting, not just on the tackle side, but also for the X-League side. And you also have on your roster a lot of, you know, overseas players in terms of, you know, the Mexican players that also play that X-League style of play. And you guys went down south to do an all-star competition. So I think that's also benefited you guys in terms of roster acquisitions, where in the past it's like you had to go through the colleges or universities. Well, now it's like people are willing to come and be on a roster, which makes a lot more easier, I guess.
Yes, for sure. I think what hurt us, unfortunately, during COVID, 2.5 years off, it's hard to keep, you know, girls engaged and, you know, showing up to practice. It's really tough. Our biggest reward is being able to play in those games. And when you go 2.5 years without that, it's hard to retain players. But, you know, I think it is a huge benefit. I recruit everywhere I go just by body shape and what I assume to be an athletic person. I mean, it doesn't even have to be at a flag tournament or, you know, pick up basketball, whatever it is. I'm walking by and I see somebody and, you know, I'm grabbing them. I can't tell you how many players we've gotten from, you know, just random instances like that, because really a lot of it is about spreading the word. It's growing at a very fast rate, but at the same time, it's still unknown as a possibility to a lot of women and female athletes.
Now, only one game at home this season because of, you know, the circumstances that happen in the league. There's opportunity. A lot of us are kind of like, okay, what's going to be the player format or the playoff format, and, you know, what's it going to take? So we're like up in the air anticipating, like, you know, is the Austin Sound going to make the playoffs, or, you know, are they going to be forced to play an additional game? No, I know it. But you know what I mean? Like, we're all that way. Everybody's asking me on our page going, okay, what's the playoff format? So I don't even know if Mitchell knows what the playoff format is.
So, you know, to be fair to the league, they did everything that they could to make sure we played some sort of season this year. Unfortunately, you know, with everybody rescheduling all kinds of events, arenas were just packed. I mean, dates were being pushed for 2 years out.
Sure.
And so it was a little difficult, you know, to get the arenas. And so I'm just grateful that, you know, we were able to get to play at all this year. And so as far as the playoff picture, the way that it's been explained to me is the top four teams are going to go. Record's going to count, head-to-head is going to count, and points are going to count. And so that's the way that it's been explained to me. We aren't going to sit back and wait and see. We have this weekend off only because we just played. And then we are pretty much 6 weeks in a row until that next game. So, you know, we're hoping that the way that it shakes out, that we're able to get in there and make a playoff run. But, you know, unfortunately, some of it is up in the air right now.
All right. So everybody that watches you loves just, you know, your aggression on the field, your vocalness on the field. I think you're turning into a different person once the lights go on. And I really think a lot of people really enjoy that part of your personality. Do you enjoy that part of your personality when you go back and watch film and you're like, is that me or –
I do and I don't. It's definitely an alter ego, and it's like a natural high and a passion that I can't explain. You know, you only understand if you've been in it. As I'm getting older, though, you know, certain things that come out of my mouth when I'm watching now, you know, as an adult and as a parent, I'm looking at it going, okay, you know, a leader would have phrased that differently. A leader would have, you know, encouraged that player. And so I've really tried to make it a point to be better about certain things. But at the same time, it's almost like I'm seeing that, you know, with certain outbursts of tenacity and passion and aggression, I just can't help it. It's just a part of who I am when I play. And, you know, if I completely held myself back, I don't think I would be as successful or perform at as high of a level, because it's just, you know, part of the energy and part of what I bring to the field.
All right, Michelle, I know you like to get into these refs' heads, and they're not regular refs, so they're kind of, you can get into them and you can somewhat get them to change a call here and there. So that's kind of something that we dive into closely when we watch. And so it's kind of unique that you can actually get somebody to make a call and change a call or get them to rethink something. So it's pretty cool when we're watching you.
So I definitely watched it in the – I don't know if you watched all the LA film, but I mean, you know, these refs, this is a different format. We're the only league really that plays this 7-on-7 style format. And so, you know, knowing that, I understand that these refs are reffing all different kinds of levels. And so I know our rule book. And so I'm always, you know, just going to get the call based on that. I think in the LA game, somebody was mocking my snap count, and even though it wasn't going to give me any sort of benefit because it was just an extra point, I still made the ref throw the flag just because, you know, I wanted to prove a point, like, that's not allowed. I know what I can do. I know what you can do. And, you know, so I kind of just approach it from, they might not know all the rules, and it's to no fault of their own. This is their 13th game that week, and they're doing the best that they can in this format. But yeah, you know, I love to talk to them. I'm in their ear all night. It's first name basis, always.
Well, I can tell you what, Lindsay Cash did mention that on our podcast when we interviewed her, that she was trying to get you sidetracked so that count was going to go off. And you did mention that to her.
yeah, that was just, you know, I also like to, you know, make sure that my linemen aren't going to get messed up, because, you know, as a defender, I've even done that, you know, mumbled the snap count or you know, flinched and clapped and done all that. And sometimes you get away with it and sometimes you don't. So I don't blame her for trying it, you know, in lots of scenarios that you can get away with that. But yeah, that was just one that I had to, you know, put my foot down and say, no, we're not going to do this.
All right. I know you have a fun time, because when we watch you on film, it looks like you're just energized and ready, and every down matters, and you're able to try to, you know, get the pass right in there or get the run. So with the uniform changes, do you think everybody's a lot more inclined to go to the wall now? Because I know before you got a shoulder injury, but now you have actual padding and full gear on the upper level. Has that changed your game at all?
So it hasn't changed mine. I would say it's definitely changed the way that I'm getting hit. I think I feel the hits a lot more because you're able to put a lot more power behind full pads. And so I think I felt the difference in the way that I'm getting hit. But as far as, my run game, I have injuries that, I nurse here and there and that are pretty chronic with me. And so if it's fourth down, I'm going to get that first down. But at the same time, I understand that I don't always need the first down. I don't always need the home run play. And so you kind of have to pick and choose as a quarterback when you're going to lay your body on the line and, when you're going to go to the wall and save your body that way.
All right. You have so many dynamic players on your team. I mean, Bills, Daniels, just to name two of them. I don't know. When we watch you guys play in terms of the sound, our expectation is big play every time almost, and it usually does happen.
Yeah. So I've been playing with Cassandra Bills and Chris for probably the last 4.5 years, not only tackle, but flag. I recently have kind of, taken a step back from the flag world to focus on tackle, but, that's what we're trying to do. We take pride in the fact that we aren't just going to run stretch 500 times. We're going to throw the ball. We're going to bomb on you. If you get scared and back up, I'm going to eat you up over the middle, under the zones. And so we take a lot of pride in being an offense in the X League that's completely different. I think every other team that you look at, they're always going to be run heavy. And so we just like having the ability to score at any time. I don't think that there's ever a fourth down or with 5 seconds left that I don't think that we can score. And I think, although we have a lot of things to clean up offensively and on the defensive side of the ball, that's what makes us so dangerous in the playoffs.
Now, the 50-burger put on you guys, was that shocking after the half, or how was the reaction at halftime for you guys in terms of, the scoring on the other side with Atlanta, really? And Ziggler's, a beast. Yeah.
For me personally, I wasn't shocked or surprised just because I've been around a long time. If you look at, I don't even know, and if old school college teams or NFL teams, if they're running the spread, if they're running the veer, exactly what they typically do. Your linemen are going to come from freaking Nebraska and Iowa. And so with that, I know that Atlanta is always going to be big. They're always going to be tough and they're always going to be physical. And so that aspect did not surprise me. The 50 points that did surprise me. When you throw five touchdowns as a quarterback, and although we missed some extra points, put up 34 points, you don't expect to lose that game. That was just a tough pill to swallow. And even with what happened defensively, I still had an opportunity. And me and Bills have talked about it already. We still had opportunities to win the game. And we weren't able to, come through. So I wouldn't say that it was surprising. I never underestimate anybody, but definitely not the result we were expecting nor what we wanted.
Yeah, it was, I wouldn't say shocking, but it was, if you watch the game, it was, on either side, like you said, they're as talented as any. Salazar is just a beast to contain as well.
Oh,
so there's,
yeah.
There's opportunities for that as well. So they're just playmakers on both sides, and it just so happened that this was their night in a lot of ways on the defensive side of things where you guys weren't able to contain in that sense. What do you say to the fans so far of the season? We're going like midway through the season here, so they've seen Chicago already. They've seen a makeshift KC, which was at the Empire. We saw LA already with display. It just looks like it's going to be yourself, Chicago, and it looks like maybe Seattle at this point, and even Atlanta in terms of the top four. So if that's the case, we're giddy for it.
Oh yeah, I'm really excited, and I love that we're on live now. I think that is such an awesome opportunity for us, just to get seen more and for people who actually want to watch to have an opportunity to see us play, not only in person, but also live on the app. So we're really excited. You know, every year the talent just gets better and better. And I hope that, you know, we can make a playoff push. And at the very least, I hope that all the games are exciting, because at the end of the day, you know, I want to win, but at the end of the day, I want to progress and I want to push the sport forward. So as long as, you know, we're all competing and putting up points and getting people to tune in, you know, I'm going to be happy.
All right. Michelle, I had a question that was sent to us by Twitter. Will you consider coaching just like Jody Nettles, the next gen of quarterbacks?
Oh yeah.
If it's
100%. I am in Austin until the wheels fall off, until my body doesn't let me. And then I fully see myself, if not as an offensive coordinator in the X League, but a quarterbacks coach. And I don't ever want to leave it. It's kind of like I grew up in it, and it's kind of like a little bit like my baby now. But yeah, I just saw Jody this weekend, gave her a hug. It's so weird to be, for me, because I'm kind of in the middle of the generation with Ziggs. You know, we know all the OGs, played with all the OGs. Now we're kind of becoming OGs, and we're looking at that next generation. So really exciting. I think the talent gets better and better the younger they are. And, yes, I will 100% be coaching if I'm ever not playing, or if and when I'm not playing.
Now, I will tell you do have a huge following in Mexico, if you weren't aware. There's just a lot of huge following for your team in Mexico. I'm pretty sure are you practicing your Spanish? Have you practiced any Spanish at all since you've gone down there and come back?
So they all joke. We kind of have different levels of English, and we all have different levels of Spanish. And so it's kind of funny. We were just talking about it the other day. It kind of almost makes us all closer, because, you know, the ones that are learning English, the ones that are learning Spanish, it's just like sometimes the look is just how you're communicating with somebody. I do know a little bit of Spanish, not a lot, but, you know, when I'm trying to explain something, I can say to the right, to the left, I can say sharp or curved. The one that they all love is that they taught me is no la caigas, which means don't F up. So that's our favorite one that we like to yell. But yeah, it's a good time, and you know, by no means can I speak Spanish, but I try here and there.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the only reason I'm saying that is because I've got like four or five, I think six groups that are either now, you know, transmitting your games when in terms of the Austin Sound only games on some of the Facebook groups, and they're like huge. All those groups are like 10K or more. So that's the reason I'm saying it's like you're kind of a big fan down south in terms of the explosion with the team and everything. So that's really good that you know, you're getting the fanfare down south. So it's just,
awesome.
You know, it's warranted, and that's pretty cool. And then obviously Anna making efforts out there to, you know, to try to create some sort of a, you know, a team out there in Mexico at some point, maybe in Monterrey or Mexico, from my understanding. So it's going to take some time, but it's going to get to that level. And I think it's going to be huge once, is that, you know, any team that you put out there, whether it be in Monterrey, Mexico, or maybe in Central Mexico, that's going to be huge.
Right, right. No, we're really excited. We actually, we did held a little camp out there. And so somebody from our team that wasn't on our team previously, we actually specifically picked out of that camp. And so it's kind of twofold. We go over there because we want to help grow the sport. And, you know, we're also looking for players. And at the same time, we want to be able to help them and build, you know, an outlet or a league for them, you know, that they're able to play in as well. Because, you know, I'm sure the players on my team, you know, they love being on the Austin Sound, but financially and, you know, with families and work and everything like that, you know, I think it would be great if they had a Monterrey team that could play in the X League, or, you know, however that looks in the future. So they do get to put a team together to play in the X League this year. So I think that's super exciting. And, you know, all those fans can tune in to their local all-star players being on that team.
Yeah, and you have a lot of Mexican players that have come and are been regulars through your season. So that's a kind of like a nice pipeline for them to go back and kind of introduce what the X League is all about and what the LFL is all about in that sense. And I know there's various leagues that, you know, that play the same style down there. And I think it's 8-on-8, not on 7-on-7, but it's 8-on-8. So it's really nice to see that the sport is evolving down south as a recruiting hotspot. And what better to go on the off season and vacation than to go to Mexico for vacation?
Right. Yeah, no, it's booming out there. I mean, I think people would be surprised with how much they love American football. I mean, flag, arena, full 11 tackle, they have it all down there. And so it's really about, them wanting to play tougher competition and be a part of something, that goes across borders. And so I think, that's really important. And they have a lot of pride from, that country. And I think they represent themselves well over here. And I just hope that it continues to grow.
All right. The changeover, do you like it? Do you like the black and yellow, the fan pass, as you mentioned earlier, where fans can get it? It's pretty cheap, $70 for the year. Not that expensive.
Yeah.
You get all access. So it's a really nice way to do it. We don't have to wait a week like we were doing before with the YouTube upload.
Right.
So you as a player, I know to it a lot, but as just your family members and any feedback that you've gotten so far, has it been very positive?
I love it. I personally, I have a lot of family in California, and they haven't been able to come to my games for 4 or 5 years now. So it's awesome for me. I think the cost is low when you look at a full season. I think it was a little tough a little hard for people to want to pay it this year just because, they didn't know was the season happening, how many games is the season going to be, and it is a little bit shorter. So I think that's the only hesitation right now, but I think it is a great deal. I think the live is awesome. I have so many messages coming to me after the game of people that were tuning in. So it's really just an awesome experience to not have to wait that week. We were upset, obviously. We were at 1 a.m. We were watching the game 2 or 3 times. So I love it. I like the full kits. I like the shoulder pads. I think we're kind of finally at that happy medium of, full coverage and still being sleek and fast and, it not just overcrowding our bodies and just covering us all up. But I'm very happy with everything. I'm really excited about the future and what it looks like for a full season.
And the dynamic of it was always to be player safety first. And I think that's one step forward to that, especially in the upper levels. I know knee injuries are always an issue because in any sport, even when you're padded, it's knee injuries, just a regular tackle, but to have, an upper chest, upper torso coverage a lot more, that is more beneficial, I think, overall. And it's a great step, to, like you said, to get it to be self-aware.
Oh, yeah.
I think the fans, no matter what, we got feedback. We did a couple polls internally in some groups. And no matter what, the fans, I don't think, really cared about the uniform change because they're really more involved with your personality, as an example. And they would watch no matter what. Because they know what you bring to the table and onto the field.
That's awesome. That's the way that that's the way that it should be, and that's the way that I hope we can continue to progress in. And I think that safety wise, the full shoulder pads is making a huge difference in the way that people feel confident in tackling and things like that. We still are in the hockey helmet, but no matter what anybody says, I'm still a believer in the hockey helmet because I think what happens is, especially in, when you consider that maybe we haven't been playing this sport for 25 years like men have, we don't have the inclination to put our head down because, you can't in a hockey helmet. In a football helmet, you can put your head down and make a tackle. So I think safety, I think we're in a good place for safety reasons. And I'm glad to hear that the fans, have responded well to it. So that's cool too.
Yeah, I think that we're fans no matter what of the sport, but in general, I think that we love just the competition itself, but we also like the fast pace, as you said before, the 50-yard mentality where, it's the high scoring. Anything can happen within a certain amount of minutes. You're not waiting for like the NFL does. So before I let you go, let's dive into the Chargers. And what do you think the Chargers are going to do this offseason? Because I know you're a big Charger fan.
And, I am way.
Herbert's been good. I've had him on my fantasy, roster for 2 years in a row. He's been very decent in terms of scoring and everything else. So What do we say of the Chargers here? They're playing in my Rams Stadium, Michelle, just to let you know. Kind of
oh,
bothers
congrats
me, but that's okay.
Well, then.
Thanks.
But, no, I am way too excited about the Chargers. I think that they've kept everybody on offense and really just in the off season went to work and put a lot of money on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I think that we took a guard, which is exactly what was needed in the draft. And then, you know, we bolstered the defense with free agency with Sebastian Day and Austin Johnson and Khalil Mack and JC Jackson. I mean, that is an all-star defensive roster. So I'm really excited. The AFC West is kind of ridiculous. So you have to kind of not lower expectations, but be realistic. That is a competitive division. So I'm hoping for a playoff year for sure. But very exciting. They've done a lot of great things, and I freaking love Coach Staley. I would go for it on fourth down every time too.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting ball. I really like the way they upgraded, to your point, and the way they put up a defensive shield. They brought in some key matchups. That's what you need for a young quarterback like him to kind of evolve. And he already had potential. Now you put a, you know, like you said, a line on him. He should be able to blossom. And then you got Russell Wilson in the mix now. You got, what, Carr. You have no idea what the Raiders are going to look like at this point. Denver's
with
Devontae first year
Adams,
out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mahomes probably the same, if not. So there's opportunity for the Chargers to really make a run and really be effective this year, especially with all those pieces. So, Michelle, thank you very much for making the time. I know you're always busy and on the go, especially after this game that you came off the loss. So we're looking forward to watching you more on FanPass. And then you guys, our fans, you get FanPass basically about $70, plus you get two tickets to go of your choice to choose a game. Hopefully it's one of those games where Michelle Angel is going to be part of it. You get to see her live in the stadium as well. So pretty cool. So anything else for the fans, Michelle, before I let you go?
No, just thank you for tuning in. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there with the tickets. You know, the pass pays for itself if you go to a game pretty much. So just tune in. Thank you for watching. Thank you for supporting and helping grow this sport. And we wouldn't be here without you. So just really appreciative and thank you for having me.
All right, Michelle, thank you. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your week. Safe travels out there. Looking forward to your next matchup.
Thank you. You have a good one.
Bye.
All right, bye.
All right, guys. Michelle Angel of the Austin Sound. What an amazing athlete. On top of that, amazing woman and athletic at all, and also very intelligent. And like she said, she might end up doing coaching to help the next generation to blossom up that quarterback line. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works on how she's going to elevate that next line going forward. I really am interested in to see where she ends up at, because Jody Nettles, as we just mentioned with the conversation with her, Jody Nettles started in flag, also went into the was part of the, I believe, the Atlanta Steam in terms of the Legends Football League, and prior to that at the LFL. And so Jody Nettles kind of like a pioneer for the 7-on-7 game in terms of the women's side, and she's done an amazing job in terms of the flag scene over in Georgia, recruitment. Bailey Hutchins, obviously one of the key athletes that the Atlanta Empire just recruited this year, and you got to see her on full display. And if you didn't, you get fan pass right there in the game. You can get it right there, Afición Vaquera, right there at the Facebook page. You can also get the replay there as well, because they're going to be showing the games, pretty much all Austin Sound games all season. So thanks to them for supplying us with coverage and live feed pass experience. That was the Austin Sound versus the Atlanta Empire. So if you didn't watch the game, go to the hub, facebook.com/GridIronBeauties. That is the place to be. That is the best network on the planet covering women's American football. And you get to see the phenom, Bailey Hutchins, versus the veteran and legend, Michelle Angel here. So thanks for Michelle to come in and make some time for us and kind of give us the breakdown here. We're going to be diving into the second huddle here in a couple minutes. We're going to be diving into Coach Claire Doerr of Football Canada, the Under-18 Women's Championships. And then in about 15 minutes or so, we're going to dive into the WFA 2022 Pro MVP of the Boston Renegades, champion Shante Bonds, MVP, multi-time MVP champion Shante Bonds. And then we're going to dive in also to the Oracle of Women's Tackle Football, and that's going to be Mark Simone in the house as well. All right. Let me just get going here. All right. Let's do it. So we're going to dive in here in a bit, and then we're going to go take care of that in a second here. All right. So should be getting a call here from Claire in a bit. But if you guys haven't checked it out, we are at the probably 30 days to the NFL. So as soon as we're done with the IFAB World Championships, we threw a teaser out there on our Twitter feed. Once we're done with the IFAB Women's World Championships, we're going to dive into the NFL in the offseason, college football, a lot of news. Hall of Famer will be here. Terry Lister will be here, as well as Mackenzie Brooks, Nate Ward. So don't miss it. And about to, you know, come back every week, but NFL specifically in the fall. So let's go into the huddle. We're going to be talking to Claire Dorr of Football Canada in a second here.
Is the fastest-growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy-to-play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Knife Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.
Don't forget, guys, go to Monkey Knife Fight. Use the code NJF to get started, especially for the NFL season. Let's dive into Football Canada this week, and let's talk to Claire Dorr, former Regina player, as well as WWCFL legend. Claire, how's it going today?
It's going really well, thanks. How about yourself?
Good. Thanks for making the time. I really appreciate it. Wanted to bring you on because the excitement of the U18 Women's Championships, which you can get right there via Football Canada on YouTube, all the coverage this week, and we shared it on our page. So what did you think of the tournament, Claire?
You know, it was so exciting to get to see young at that age compete at such a high level. It was exciting across the board. We played a six-a-side version of the game, and that opens the field wide open and lots of big plays, lots of excitement for everybody.
What did you think of Ontario football? They really made an impression first time out. It's pretty cool.
Well, and that's it. This is the first time for this age category for anybody across Canada. So we were just thrilled in Saskatchewan to be hosting, but also that teams as far east as New Brunswick and Ontario made the trip, as well as our neighbors to the east and west, Alberta and Manitoba. You know, we were all together for a week in the same dorm, so we got to make friends with everybody. And I'll say all the teams made impressions, and we were just excited to be there.
What do you think of the talent pool going forward? From if you step back and you saw this huge amount of talent on all these squads, what did you think that's going to benefit the football Canada in terms of the national squad on the IFAB level?
I really do hope so. Right, engaging women at this stage, right, young women when they're making this as their priority, their first football choice, gives us more years to develop them and teach them the game in a way that we hope leads more of these players to the national team and, of course, national team-level success.
Now, Claire, you're part of championship teams, especially in the WWCFL, Saskatoon being probably the benchmark and the top team in terms of, you know, the league and it's in existence. Then you got your team, the Regina Riot, right next to it as the, you know, the top two teams basically in the WWCF. What do you give us a perspective of the 12 years almost of the WWCFL? Have you seen it grow from year one to now year 12?
Oh, without a doubt. We talk this year, you know, your memories show up on Facebook and you see what you see. And we talk about reminiscing about the days where we would change on the field, you know, outside Mosaic Stadium to now where we have, you know, full-on locker rooms and facilities to use and proper fields as opposed to, you know, just someone's, you know, backyard-style grass. You know, and the talent has continued to develop. You know, our first year, of course, everybody was a rookie and we were all bonded by learning together. But here we are, fast forward 12 years later, we have true veterans of the game. If you think most people only play a 7 to 10-year career, we have 10, 12-year veterans who are, you know, really showing these players how it's done and making sure that we appreciate all the people who helped the program grow. and in particular the support we get in Saskatchewan, which is, you know, no surprise that the Saskatoon Valkyries and the Regina Riot are always the, you know, in the final and representing in the WWCFL.
Claire, what did you think of Manitoba's run this year? It was really impressive. You know, Manitoba girls football program has been very impressive over the start of their, you know, in its infancy, and they've grown it there. Lisa has done a great job there, trying to filter that next level. But I think, you know, the Fearless being in the final this year, it wasn't wasn't like a great final, but at the same time, you're taking on Saskatoon. But just the progression of that team this year was just so impressive.
Well, and it does. It speaks to all of the programs, you know, in Manitoba with the MWFA, as you mentioned. Here in Saskatchewan, we have the PGFL. Out in Ontario, they're starting a league. In Edmonton, they now have a league. And that development, starting at a younger age, means that when these athletes age up to teams like the Fearless or the Storm, that they are already experienced football players and are able to go out and contribute immediately, as opposed to, you know, a 19-year-old rookie joining the team and taking sometimes 2 or 3 years to really truly understand the game. So the work Lisa did in Manitoba, that Tanya and Sean did in Edmonton, and I'm going to miss so many names, you know, but that are using their positions to strengthen the game at a younger age group will only serve the WWCFL and the other adult leagues across Canada.
Now, we know we had, WWCFL is a staple. We have Maritime that's been in place for a long time, and now we have the Central Canadian Women's League as well. So there is an opportunity, just like the U.S. has, you know, several leagues besides the two big leagues. In Canada, we're starting to see that west to east kind of bonding with all the leagues now kind of migrating into each area and region, which it speaks well for the sport in general. Because out there on the in New Brunswick, it's always been in existence, but we were always missing that one middle piece in terms of the central side.
Well, and this is of course the dream, right? We love the development of each league independently, but wouldn't the dream be that this is one Canadian-wide league? And if we keep on growing and developing, and I'm not talking in a year, like I know this is years down the road, but that we're in a position that we're competing nationally, as opposed to just in our bubbles, because anytime and right, like with the centralizing of the Team Canada tryouts this year, just that up level of competition, as opposed to when we've had the East and West camps, just having everybody together just raised the game and set the bar higher. So that would be the dream, right? Ultimately, that all of these teams continue to exist and it becomes one Canadian league. But, you know, all the people in all the leagues are doing so much work to make sure their league stands on its own feet and gets noticed. So kudos to all of them, east to west, and we just continue to hope for more growth.
Well, it would be a great type of environment, right? You got a Montreal Blitz taking on Saskatoon Valkyries in a final, or St. John Storm taking on, you know, Montreal Blitz, et cetera. So, yeah, that would be a dream.
Oh, and then I figure you got to dream big, right? We're laying the groundwork for generations to come, so we want to think big and keep pushing the pile forward.
Claire, speak to to our fans about your career, how you started, when you shifted out of your career, and now, you know, what things are you doing to benefit the sport?
Well, I was part of the original. I was one of the original members of the Riot when it started, and it was just literally a friend of mine saw a post and said, "Why don't we go check this out?" We did, and really, in that way, the rest is history. I fell in love with the game in a different way than as a fan or as a player, and I've always coached. So as I transitioned out after Worlds in 2017, that felt like a pretty storybook way to end a career, right? A WWCFL championship, a national championship, a world silver medal. It felt like a good time and place to end my playing career, but I was already invested in coaching, again, at the here in the local leagues and our minor leagues, and we started up the Regina Victorias, which is a U18 girls nine-a-side program. And, you know, it really drives me to see the growth and see the development and wanting to move that bar higher and push the pile, like I said, forward for all the athletes. So this is a game that would become available to anybody who wants to access it. So that's the path I've chosen, and through doing that through coaching. So I coach, you know, minor girls football. I coach high school boys football. I coach with the WWCFL. I was given the opportunity to, as you've mentioned, coach with the U18 girls provincial team, and of course with the national team. And so I'm going to take as many opportunities as I can to continue to develop as a coach and find places for all of the athletes who want to access football to have that opportunity.
Claire, two of the top athletes, Hannah McEwen and Bree, were down south, and they were playing in the WNFC, winning the Nine Cup Championship this year. So two Canadian standouts. Also, I believe Bree was on the 2017 silver team. So what do you think of their journey down south?
You know, I think they're brave and bold, and again, it's that vision, right? Other females can be done, that can make football a career choice and go out of your way to play. And so now that's a model that others can look to follow and pursue. I think, you know, we have 45 players on that Canadian roster, and I bet you have 45 entirely different journeys. They're all, you know, really important for us to see and hear, so that, you know, it doesn't have to be impossible or unachievable for new athletes. They have to see that this is something that can be done. And it's incredible to see that people are making it a priority and traveling to find a higher level to play at, or whatever, you know, they were seeking when they went.
Claire, this 2022 Canada team, what do we expect at the Vonta tournament with the IFAB this year? Do we expect gold?
Well, that's always right. That's always the standard you're after. We together and work hard and make sure our execution is on point, and that we are playing at 100% every time we get the opportunity. And we will hope that that scoreboard does us right when it comes.
Claire, who will be leading us in terms of the scope for the Football Canada? Who's our quarterback? I know McEwen was on the running game as well. Who's going to be the leader of this squad, or have we decided that yet, Ned?
Well, you know, that's the beautiful thing. We have two wonderful, strong quarterbacks who can both lead and offer different highlights to their field. But we are, like I said, when you're selecting a team like this, we have 45 people who can all be leaders, who can all step up and are all athletic. So it's early, right? We haven't had a centralized training camp since Ottawa in early May. So it'll be a wait and see and look to see who's playing well and who's got the hot hand. The 11 are on the field, have the best chemistry.
Are you excited to see Mexico back? Australia is going to return. We've got Germany coming back. The UK, good showing in Vancouver. Which other teams are you excited to watch besides the U.S. and Canada?
Well, you know, Mexico coming back will be a thrill. You know, really, the fact that any of these teams are making a return is exciting. Finland gave us a pretty hot run last time when I played as an athlete in 2013, so we'll look forward to seeing what they have to offer. Right, it's been 5 years, so there's potentially a lot of changeover on these rosters, so there is an element of the unknown in terms of who's still around, how the athletes have changed, and so I think we'll be excited no matter who you put across the field from us.
All right, Claire, thank you very much for making the time. Really appreciate it. Pioneer in football in Canada. I really wanted to bring you on to give us a perspective of what's going on with
Thanks
sport
a lot for
in
having
Canada.
Me.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you diving into the under 18 women's tournament as well.
Absolutely. Like I said, it was an honor to be a part, and I'm glad it's getting recognition for the excitement.
Awesome. So, Claire, thank you again. I look forward to another chat as we once we get through the IFAB World Championships. Looking forward to Team Canada making that gold win and upsetting U.S. or any other team that's going to be in that tournament.
Well, you know, like I said, with the amount of time it's been, we hope that we've reset, we've refreshed, and that we are ready to compete and take home a gold medal. But what matters most to us, of course, is putting our best game on the field. And like I said, I truly believe the scoreboard should take care of itself.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Safe travels. Looking forward to watching you on that field in Vaughan.
Super. Thank you so much for chatting with me, and hope it's a great tournament for all.
Have a great night. Enjoy it.
Cheers. Thank you. You too.
All right, guys. That was the talented Claire Doerr. What an amazing pioneer in football Canada. And let's bring in the Oracle of Fall here, Mark Simone, to kind of dive in here to that. Mark, Claire Doerr, a legend, you know, in a lot of ways in Football Canada, part of the Regina Riot, started with the WWCFL in terms of its infancy, now a coach at the IFAB World Championships, as well as leading the way for the next generation for Canada.
Well, that's exactly what you want to see, right? No matter the country, no matter the level or the program, to, you know, develop football minds is, you know, perhaps the best, greatest sort of, you know, compliment that any kind of program can have. So that's really awesome to hear. You know, it just brings a different perspective to the game. And when you're going into the IFAF Women's World Championships, you know, it's really awesome to see women on the sidelines, particularly foreign players, and, you know, not just the women on the field. So that's really great.
And then Mark, just to, you know, with her conversation, when I was talking to her on Instagram, on, you know, direct message and stuff, just the fact that this whole, you know, setup in terms of Football Canada, it's not like USA Football where we have just Utah and it's sprinkled a couple of programs in the States. They literally have, you know, four programs already set in place for that next gen level to, you know, to bring in that roster, just like the Manitoba Girls Football League. There's, you know, like she said, alluded to, Tanya Walters over in Edmonton, and there's a couple other places in Saskatchewan, and then you got the, you know, the Maritime plus the Central Canadian Women's. So, I mean, her goal is to have what we have in the States in terms of the WFA and the WNFC, is to have a left, you know, east to west type of national league that it will be in Canada, just like it is in the U.S. with the WFA.
Right. And, you know, there's an economy of scale that favors Canada that, you know, compared to the United States and, you know, the kind of the vast number of players and number of cities where, you know, you could build programs, you know, contrarily, you know, Canada's population is kind of more manageable in this sense. And you can really sort of have a national involvement in the development of the game that, you know, isn't too unwieldy, right? So that's a certain advantage that I think Canada has in the development, particularly of the women's game, is that they can build up these kind of feeder systems, I think, a lot more strategically and more quickly than we can here in the United States, just by virtue of size. And
yeah.
So, you know, maybe in the next few years, in the next decade or two, in terms of international competition, you know, Canada's already, you know, kind of like the number two team compared to the U.S., but they should be, you know, genuinely vying for that gold medal. Should that feeder system continue to develop there in Canada?
And it was an interesting format, Mark. It's basically, well, 6-on-6, but it worked out well, right? Because you don't have the numbers yet, so the under 18 women's is sort of introductory as to what's potential nationwide.
Yep.
In terms of the programs, so that was kind of unique to have that. But it's something, like she said, there. It's a starting point. You go from 6-to-6, maybe you jump to what 9-on-9 as an example, and then you're going to progress to the 11s-on-11s type tournament in terms of the youth format. So they got something going on there in Canada, obviously for a good reason. So shout out to Claire Doerr and Football Canada for doing their part. And if you guys missed the games, the under 18 women's championship, the youth championships, they're right there at the Hub, courtesy of Football Canada on YouTube. So it was really exciting games. Shout out to Team Alberta, who won the tournament, versus, I think, Saskatchewan, Team Saskatchewan. So those are the top two teams there. And shout out to Ontario Football for putting up a great show on their first year coming out as well. So really awesome. We're going to go into the huddle, Mark, and we're going to be talking to somebody you're well aware of and know about. So that's going to be the talented MVP of the 2022 Pro Championship, and that'll be Shantae Bonds here in a second.
Is the fastest growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy to play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Knife Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.
All right, guys, don't forget Monkey Knife Fight. Get ready for the NFL season. $5 free play on us. You can make $15 on a great prop that you can get right. So check it out, Monkey Knife Fight. Use the code NJF. Let's bring in the 2022 WFA Pro MVP. That would be Shantae Bonds of the Boston Renegades. What's going on, Shantae?
How you doing? How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing? Are you drunk? Did you recover from all this after party stuff? No?
Oh, no. That's all cleared up now. It's back to work now.
I know Aaron was, I don't know, from her tweets, I think Aaron was pretty high and excited, and so I don't know if she's recovered yet. We're talking Redwood, so I don't know if she's in good hands already.
I think everybody's kind of slowly coming out of the days of all the excitement and the after party. So, yeah, I think we're all doing okay right now.
Yeah, I had to check on Mark to make sure he wasn't drunk when he's coming on the podcast from that celebration as well. So he's doing well.
It's true. It was kind of disorienting to have the game there on a Sunday. And, like, mm-hmm. today, you know, I lost track of what day it was. Like, today feels like Monday. And, you know, you guys traveled yesterday, so that was kind of an off day. So with a whole whirlwind of excitement, it must be really kind of disorienting to, like, then immediately land back into, you know, normal everyday life mode.
Absolutely. I was just talking about it today, actually. I felt the same. I'm like, what day is today? For all the reasons, right? The weekend was just unbelievable. And you're on such a high. And then, you know, you get back and, you know, this morning at 7:30, I'm printing copies of math lessons for my summer school students. It's just like, kind of crazy.
Did they ask you, what did you do this weekend? That would be the question of the week.
My students are awesome. So they knew what the weekend, what I had going on last weekend. So when I came back, it was, well, how'd the game go? Did you win? But it wasn't until like halfway through class that they remembered that I was away trying to win a national championship. So they're awesome. They're all very excited for me and the team. So good kids.
That's so cool. Shantae, what happened? Did you trip Cahill and got the injury, got your playoff appearance, and then all of a sudden you get your MVP? What happened there?
Al is one of my best friends on the team. And so, you know, it was sad to have her out. But, you know, she's an amazing leader. And so when she knew that she wasn't going to be able to bring us home, she made sure that I was prepared as best as I could be to do the job. And just her leadership and her knowledge of the game, like, I learned so much in the last 3 weeks between her and Vernon prepping me for this game. So forever grateful to her, and looking forward to having her back soon.
Shantae,
I did not trip her.
You did not? Okay, rumor had it that you maybe tripped her over just to get your opportunity, but we just wanted to clarify that, you know? I'm kidding.
Absolutely not. I'd rather catch balls from her than throwing them.
Well, I hope she's doing well, because it seems like she's doing okay. She's got, you know, a national championship on top of that, without having to hit the field at that point. So it's really good too. So got to feel good. What did you think of the, you know, the whole thing? I mean, we were looking for her in like a Waldo mentality on the first broadcast. I was talking to Mark, mm-hmm. and me and Ben, Mark were going back and forth. And I was trying to get him, hey, where is Cahill, right? Because they were doing the broadcast, and I saw you as a quarterback, and then we're like, where is Cahill? Everybody's like on the Waldo thing, and then I kind of figured out there was an injury there. But, you know, what a performance between you, that international backfield, including Falkowski there. Just an amazing offense right there.
Yeah, I mean, our running backs are unbelievable this season. Our offensive line, ridiculous. And their relentlessness to just continue to block over and over again. And it's just like such a selfless team. Same for our receivers, you know, played a little bit of a different style than we're used to in the past where we're able to air the ball out a little bit more. This year we put it on the ground a little bit more, and I think everyone on the offense did not care how we were scoring points as long as we were getting in the end zone. And so, yeah, just really grateful to the entire offense. They're awesome.
What an opportunity for Mata and Kusinen to, you know, to hoist the trophy. They've done that and been very successful in their country. Just speaks volumes about how their commitment to come over every season and try to be part of this team as well, almost at, what, two seasons now? So it speaks volumes for their resume too, because they're on this team that's obviously on the high and the standard in terms of the WFA.
Right. I mean, they're great teammates too. They come right over. We know that they're putting in work when they're not with us, and they hit the ground running. We don't skip a beat when they're here. They're just great human beings, great teammates, and they work hard. They have the same mindset as the rest of us, and so it's just seamless when they're on the team with us.
Now, Shante, let's talk about the first half. You guys, with your cohorts here, with your running game, you guys go up big in the first half, then the second half, third quarter in that sense. So it was really, when we watched the game, we were expecting a little bit more competitiveness from Minnesota, given the fact that we had no Grace Cooper as well, kind of missing there with the injuries. But bottom line is, it was a whole team effort on both sides. Defensively, you held them down. Offensively, you guys were able to score almost at will. So just an impressive outing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were saying after every game that we still have yet to play a complete game. You know, there was always something in a different certain phase of the game that we wanted to be better. And I felt like this game was a game where defense, I mean, man, like unbelievable defense. The red zone stances that they had, the turnovers that they created, allowed the offense to kind of get into the groove and figure some things out early on. So they were awesome. Our special teams,
yeah,
unbelievable. The punt return by Shannon Singletary put us in an excellent spot for our offense to come out and score right away. And so, yeah, I think it was a complete team effort, which makes a win like this even better, because you know it was the entire team that was a part of it. So it was awesome.
Shante, you know, now you played, you know, safety for most of the season. So, you know, you have that perspective of being on the defense. But, you know, certainly in this game, you know, you're on the sidelines for the defense when the defense was on the field. You know, what was that like? Were you watching what the defense was doing on the field, or were you just in full quarterback mode getting ready for the next series?
Yeah, I think it depended on what was happening in the game. For the most part, though, once the offense comes off the field, I'm on the iPad looking at, you know, what that last series drive looked like. See how the defense is playing, certain plays that we have, how we could capitalize on that the next drive. And so depending on the intensity of the game and I'm actually looking at what I need to do next. I'm not able to watch the defense as much as I want to. But then when we started to get comfortable offensively, we kind of got a handle on some things. I was able to be on the sideline carrying on our defense and watching them do their thing. It's nice to see our rookies just ball out, and it feels good to be a fan, to cheer on my teammates on the side. So when I have the opportunity to do that, I'm all in.
Yeah, that's great. I think the Renegades rookie class this year has taken on, a lot of responsibility, even compared to some previous rookie classes. And I think we've seen really excellent play out of them. And that's such a, as you can attest to, a huge help in just continuing to high performance, kind of like, even if you lose, veterans, which happens every year, to be able to train up the rookies so effectively and have them on the field for, a lot of the game is pretty tremendous. Could you, tell us, about some of the rookies on the team who have been impactful for the Renegades this season?
Oh, there's so many to name. But I would say Kara G is one of our outside linebackers who has been just a sponge. And you could tell she's having so much fun out there and just getting after it. So on special teams, she's one of the field alongside Shawnee making the tackle. And then, when she's on defense, she understands her reads so well. She plays hard, and she forces things to happen. And so there's just so much talent there. There's so much promise in her, and I'm excited to see what she's going to do in the future. Selena Pasquale, I think, is another person who has been a tremendous impact for our defense, and she's just relentless. She gets after the ball no matter who's in front of her. It's like she just kind of tunnel visions, blacks out, and nothing else matters but the ball. And to have that type of mentality, that go-getter type of an attitude to go in and do that job on every single down, that's something you can't teach. That's just innate inside of her. And so once she understands the game a little bit more, she's unstoppable. So those two come to mind. I feel bad naming those two because there's so many others that are just chomping at the bit waiting to get out there to make an impact. And I think it just speaks to the amount of talent, the depth that we have in our team. And I'm looking forward to seeing what these guys do in the future.
Shante, talk to us about Daniel Fournier. Probably one of the key elements out of that whole defensive stance. You talk about Gamble, Pasquale, yourself on there, but talk to us about Fournier, and she's just a, year in, year out, just a beast, kind of putting it out there for herself, and she is, somebody that the offense, the other team, 70, they have to look out for.
Yeah, Donnie, she's special, man. Her demeanor, she's just so quiet and poised and humble and just does her job. But she, the amount of work that she puts in off of the field, I think completely transcends what she's doing on the field. It's awesome to see how much better she gets every single year. And again, I think a lot of it has to do with, because what you guys see is the end product, right? What you don't see is all of the preparation that goes into it for our entire organization, the entire team. And Donnie in particular is meticulous about, what she's putting in her body, what her workout routine is, how much sleep she's getting, all in preparation for practices and games. And so what you guys see out there on game day, it's she didn't just wake up and this happened. And so it's just a testament to her work ethic, her tenacity, and her dedication to doing what she needs to do to do what we can on the field, and doing what she needs to do to help us win games. So she's awesome. Great teammate, great person, great work ethic.
Yeah. I don't know if how many people have seen the video of Mr. Kraft calling to congratulate the team after mm-hmm. the game, but there's you might call it an extended cut where Mr. Kraft like literally says number 70 and gives some praise to Donnie, which is quite a moment. It was pretty clear that Mr. Kraft watched the game very, very carefully. So that was something else. What was that like, just being on the receiving end of that that call, that whole thing?
Yeah, it was a surprise for one. That didn't happen a year ago. And so when we got into the locker room and we gathered around and the cell phone is out on speaker, like, what's happening right now? And then we hear Robert Kraft's voice. I'm like, whoa, this is awesome, you know. And for him to, he shouted out a couple of players. But, yeah, that was a great moment when he said, that number 70, she's special. To see Donnie's face, she was blown away. And so you guys, obviously, this is radio here, but as I'm telling the story, I'm beaming ear to ear because she deserves all of the recognition that she got from him because of how hard she works. And it's undeniable. It's hard not to see it. And for him to, she's a household name, number in this house right now, right? He was paying attention, and that's just awesome. It was a great moment. And I'm sure something she'll never forget. I know I won't.
And she's obviously a key piece to that. That's really the reason I mention it too, because and he knows that that's a key piece to the defensive side of the ball and to keep this Renegades. Shante, four in a row. I guess you know when you can say seven total. I guess this is kind of you guys are the benchmark in terms of the WFA, you know, overall. So how do you receive that yourself? You know, you guys are the bench. This is you are the target. You are now literally, in terms of WFA history, probably the best team in terms of the history of the WFA.
Yeah, I think all of the success that our team has received, has earned, for me, I feel like it's – I don't want to sound like, oh, cocky, like, oh, I'm not surprised, but it was bound to happen because I know the amount of work that our team puts in to make sure that we're as successful as we can be. And so, yeah, winning four in a row and setting such a winning tradition in Boston, it really is – all I'm thinking about is, okay, how do we get to the next one? What do we need to do next? How much time do we need to take off to make sure that we are, you know, I guess like we are ready to go back in the fall. And so making sure that we're doing what we need to do for our bodies to recover to get right back at it. So this is great. It's exciting. Well, I want to live in the moment. And I think I could speak for the rest of the team where it's like, yes, we're going to stay here and savor this for a little while, but we can't stay here forever. It's like, okay, now what's next? Another championship. How do we get there? And we start setting these little goals again. And so it's, yeah, not resting on our laurels, but also making sure that, you know, we enjoy the moment. But, all right, we need to move forward now. What's our next goal?
Shante, MVP honors more than once for you in probably some of the biggest stage. You got ESPN2. I think the last time you got MVP honors, you were also on the big stage. So what is this, you know, how does it, you take it in? How do you take in this MVP honors for yourself?
Yeah, I think it's, I'd rather someone else get the MVP, to be honest. Like this game in particular, I feel like there were so many other of my teammates who also deserved that accolade. I think it's great, but it really means nothing. What's more important to me is that we got another ring. It's awesome. It's a nice kind of cherry on top, icing on the cake. But again, if I received an MVP award and we didn't have the outcome that we wanted, it means nothing. And so I don't put too much weight on the personal individual accolades, because what matters is what we do as a team. And if I can do anything to help our team win, for me, that's all that matters. So the MVP is great, but not anything that I hold too strong to.
Well, I appreciate you making the time, short notice. I know you're, getting back into your own regular job thing, but I really wanted to bring you on because I wanted to spotlight your accolades, the great playoff run, minus Cahill's being injured, and you step in and take control of this team for the two most important, games probably at the end of the season. So it speaks volumes about your leadership. It also speaks volumes about, like you said, your teammates having confidence in yourself as well. And ultimately, a deserving MVP. What a performance in Canton against the Minnesota Vixens. So congratulations again.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on and appreciate talking to you guys. This was great. Thank you.
All right, Shante, thank you again for coming on. I appreciate it. Have a safe week. Get back in the groove of it there. And then we're looking forward to, number five in a row, if that's the case. Looking forward to, like you said, working towards that fifth title. I'm pretty sure Boston fans are very grateful for you guys' accomplishment. So looking forward to the next season as to see what you guys are going to come up with.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Bye, Shante.
Have a good
day. See you later.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye, guys.
All right, Mark. I had to get her on short notice. She was more than gracious to come on, and I really appreciate her time. But deserving of the MVP honors, take them into the playoffs with Cahill out, plus, a really good supplemental backfield that she had as well. So, Bonds, there's not enough you can say. I mean, probably one of the legendary renegades in terms of the scope of the team, in terms of the history of the team. And then and she's come through every time. Last time she was MVP as well, and she came through. And so, speaks volumes about the pedigree of this team and also just her leadership in leading this team to punch it in.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. I also agree with her that, there are, a number of other players on the team that could have won that MVP this year. But, Shante, she really does deserve it, not only for the way she played, which was outstanding, 127 rushing yards and two touchdowns, but for the way that she prepared, right, and got ready for the moment. That's what the MVP honor is really made of, I think, this year. So, she definitely deserves that accolade, and thankfully she can enjoy another championship, which is the collective goal from the beginning.
I know you're a fan of the team. Deep down, I know this fifth one is going to be probably a little tougher, but overall, there is an attainability for a fifth one, don't you think, Mark, based on the nucleus that they have there?
I agree. You never know, what the next season is going to hold in terms of, your own team, not to mention other teams, right, in terms of personnel, your coaching staff, just other things that happen. But, I definitely have to say at this point, given where the Renegades are at and certainly other teams in the National Conference, I think chances are very good that Boston will reach the championship game next year. And, and once you get to a scenario where it's just one game, you like your chances if you're Boston. So I don't want to look too far ahead, Like I said, anything could happen. in the off season, and you know, but yeah, they're definitely looking like a very strong team. This is, you know, very strong program. You know, they put the time in to build the program up from 2015 to, you know, reaching the finals in 2017, winning it in 2018, and they just continue to build upon the success, and that's what it's all about. You know, that's the master plan, and they're doing it.
Mark, a great ending. Minnesota, a little bit disappointed with themselves. They were just not able to muster any type of offense. But, you know, credit, like we just said right now, credit the defense for shutting that down for three quarters. They're able to punch in two scores, basically. But the bottom line is it's kind of dominated on one side. You know, the Renegades' backfield was just so impressive and so hard. It just basically killed down the Minnesota defense so bad that was the ending. So shout out to, you know, Minnesota for a great season as well. But at the end of the day, this is, you know, this is the standard, and once again they hoist the trophy. What did you think of D2, Mark? Kimberly, we talked about her being the key. We also talked about how Mile High on defense was going to be the key, and it looked that way initially. Derby did play a very good game. Offensively, I think they lacked some surprise, you know, throwing skills that they had before, but they didn't go for until the late corner, you know, a quarter. It just became one of these games where it was down to the wire, but, you know, opportunities for Derby were there. Just unfortunately, it just didn't mature.
Yeah, you know, I felt like if Derby could score three touchdowns, they'd be in a position to win. And that was true. They did not convert on a two-point conversion, which could have won the game for them. But, you know, Mile High played an outstanding game. They also got three touchdowns. Okay, both teams, you know, scored three touchdowns. And it was a little bit more high-scoring than I thought it was going to be. But as you said, you know, Derby City, they had their chance at the end. They had a chance for a drive. It just seemed to me that they, I don't know if they weren't prepared or they just didn't seem to have a two-minute drill for that situation. A lot of time burned off the clock in that last 2 minutes, and they weren't getting plays off quickly. And, you know, so maybe they just weren't prepared for that moment. But, you know, when all is said and done, that was an outstanding football game for both teams. It was hard fought. I think both teams, you know, worked their game plans pretty well, but there can only be one winner, and that was the Mile High Blaze. And, you know, one outstanding, you know, performance by the Blaze. I was very impressed.
I think defensively they played a really good game. The last 3 minutes to your 4 minutes, I think Derby running the ball probably wasn't the best thing they could have done. They did have weapons with Buckner, and, you know, they had some weapons there. Is it Meeks or Weeks? I want to say who was one of the key stoppers in terms of some plays that Mile High was in the red zone, and they were able to bat the balls off. So that right there in itself was, you know, they were in the game. Some key players there, but the bottom line is they ran the ball almost in the last, 4 minutes to your point, and they could have aired it out.
Yep.
I mean, there was opportunities there, and I think that was their detriment ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the play selection wasn't the best just in terms of, you know, the not stop, you know, stopping the clock and kind of preserving some time for themselves, because ultimately they ran out of time, right? They were at midfield, and, you know, they had to take a couple of shots down the field because they didn't have enough time. You know, I certainly understand, you know, having some running plays that you think they, you know, has the potential to break a big one. But you have to have, you know, you have to have more than that, ready to go. If those things don't work out, you know, you got to do something else. So yeah, I feel like the clock management at you know, last few minutes for Derby was, you know, wasn't in their favor.
Now, the bottom line is we talk about Mile High, like you said, in terms of their history, they've struggled to get here. They've struggled to advance, and this is the year they did it. So, and I, you know, got to give credit to Kimberly Santa-Steven for doing a fantastic job on offense. They really created some really good, drives. Defensively, they were just really good in terms of stopping the run, in terms of Furman and Meyer and company there. So, credit them for sticking to their game plan. And then in the last 4 minutes, to your point, Mark, they really just stood there and, you know, they just understood that they were going to run it, and they really didn't really pursue, understanding that they were just killing the clock. So I don't understand, you know, where Derby's mindset was.
Yeah. But, you know, Mile High, they played it, I think, like, you know, Boston, Mile High probably feels like they played one of their most complete games of the season in this one, which, you know, definitely goes a long way towards winning that championship trophy. So on both sides of the ball, as you point out, you know, offense and defense, I feel like their offensive performance in this game was, you know, perhaps their strongest of the season, and their defensive performance was very strong as well.
That last play of the game, Mark, just pretty much sums up the whole game. You know, the batted ball at the end, that was literally how, you know, it was all game. And it was just, you know, the time ran out and one team batted the ball. But it was that type of game. It was, you know, trying to – one play would have changed the element of it, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, it was a big win. And, you know, I'm very happy to see that, you know, already the mayor of Denver and the governor of Colorado have offered their congratulations to the Blaze on social media. So I'm hopeful that more will come out of that. Those are, like, really, you know, really fantastic connections that, you know, a team can make to help their cause of, you know, getting more recognition and, you know, thereby becoming a stronger team financially. You get, you know, more people to show up to your tryouts. You get more volunteers who want to help because they want to be a part of something special. So if anything, you know, hopefully, you know, the Blaze will really, you know, reap the benefits of winning a championship. And they can use that to you know, make themselves better and really step up the game a little bit more. And then we'll perhaps see them in the pro division next year.
Yeah, and the key piece for me is, you know, a really good, solid quarterback stance, like I said. Santa-Steven's played a very good game. Yet smooth Lori Jones finally gets her ring. And just, you know, and then just watching Wynn just be so happy for the win. You know what I mean? I don't know if that rhymes well, but just having her be happy for it. I mean, she's gone through a lot in the last couple of seasons, you know, in and out of the playoff first round, second round, finally to, you know, to get to hoist the trophy. That was just awesome to see.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely a big win. You know, certainly happy for those players who, and you know, coaches and staff who came close before. It's tough to lose a playoff game or a championship game, and then to finally win it. That's one of the sweetest feelings that a person can feel in sports. So I'm very excited for them.
Now, Mark, for Thelma and company, Coach McMillan, this was a tough one to kind of, you know, lose. But to your point, you know, the last 4 minutes, they could have done something different. Maybe they could have punched in a score there and they could have just earned it that way, but they did not. So, you know, they had a great season as well. 4-4, I think it was their actual season, right? And then they come in here to face 6-1, Mile High. So, you know, they were looking for that back-to-back championship. But overall, we talked to her a couple podcasts before. She was talking about how it was a total rookie class, majority of the squad. They had to make changes in season. So, you know, for Derby, you know, shout out to them for making it a competitive one game loss. I mean, that just nothing wrong with that. It just, they just played to the last end, and they just, the better team just got, you know, that one point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we can't take anything away from Derby City and what they have accomplished. I mean, what they were trying to do is, you know, that's a hard thing to do, especially when you lost a lot of veterans and you're plugging in rookies to be starters and, you know, maybe having players play both ways or, you know, change positions. So in light of that and all those things that Selma told us several weeks ago, what the Derby City Dynamite is really quite remarkable. It's quite incredible to reach that championship game at a higher level than you were last year. And, you know, they almost pulled it off. There's definitely much to be said about that. I feel like it's a very successful season for Derby City.
Mark, the one thing I took away from this game was nobody took a down off. Everybody was right on it, defensively, offensively. They all were battling hard. So congratulations to both teams. Probably, if you put it in scope in terms of the 2 years, this is probably the game that you can watch and go back and go, this was just a tight-knit, you know, back-and-forth seesaw battle. And so shout-out to both teams for putting a great performance on there. I think I've watched it more than once already, almost three times, because of the fact that it was so good to watch and go back and forth. So it was a really great game. Mark, we talked about OKC. We said if Jeffries cannot be contained, the Savages would have problems, and the Savages got problems.
Yeah. I'm going to say I was really surprised, but, a bit surprised that Oklahoma City, really pretty much dominated that game. They controlled pretty much the whole game, and the scoreboard showed it. It was a very solid performance by Oklahoma City. Now for Capital City, though, I mean, I'm sure they'll be, you know, the same thing. Like, turnovers will get you. Turnovers really did not help their cause at all. Mm-hmm. In that game, it cost them, it cost them everything. It cost them field position, cost them time of possession, cost them points that they might have been able to score. And, I think Oklahoma City scored, at least a couple, took advantage of a couple of those turnovers and converted those into points. That's a tough pill to swallow. But that was the story of the game. And it also was an interesting game. Congratulations to the Oklahoma City Lady Force. They proved it, that they were worth their undefeated status going into the game. So that was pretty awesome.
And it wasn't like a one-sided game. But through the first, two quarters, almost to half, it was pretty an evenly matched game. And to your point, once the Savages started creating some of the turnovers, it really became a detrimental thing for them. They did, they did keep it tight for almost, I think, two quarters, if I'm correct. And then it was just basically, it just got away from them, like you said. You know, the team took advantage of it. OKC really converted points, and it just became a big hurdle for Capital City to even – muster a series or two to get going.
Yeah, it's so hard to play a championship game that's not, you didn't play up to your potential. You didn't execute your game plan. You had these sort of mistakes, and mistakes that they didn't really make a lot of these kind of mistakes during the regular season. So In a way, it was kind of an uncharacteristic for the Capital City Savages. That it doesn't really reflect, what kind of team they are. So, that's sad. That's a shame, because we would much rather see teams perform their best in the championship game. So that's too bad.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting to see that the first half, I think it ended in a 7-0 game, so it was really tight still. They were in the game. It became more of an issue in the third quarter, to your point, and then once the fourth quarter came around, OKC did almost the same thing that they were doing against Arizona. Once the fourth quarter came in, they just really started to, you know, dive into themselves. But, you know, like I said, Savage's defense did keep, I think it was 7-0, Mark, through three quarters. So it wasn't like it's, you know, they didn't play well enough. They just somehow were not able to play one big quarter, and they gave up too many points, and OKC just took advantage of that.
You know, I think, you know, the Savages definitely proved that, you know, they belonged in that game, right? They definitely earned their way to the championship, and yeah, they did play him tough, you know, just not long enough, and they couldn't score points.
Yeah, I think Wilson will probably have to look at herself in the mirror and figure out what went wrong, because you know, the Savages defense did do their job. They did their job for three quarters. Offensively, Wilson and the offense just was not able to get going, and I think that was the detriment for the Capital City Savages. Their offensive line plus their offensive, you know, output was just not able to take advantage of some of the key plays that they were doing during the season, and that was a big deal. And then, you know, throwing interceptions, it's not going to help you either for quick scores. So that was literally the difference in the fourth quarter. I mean, I think it was 8 minutes left in the game, you throw an interception, that's just not going to help your cause. So they literally lost it in the fourth. Ultimately, that's where KC won the game, went in one quarter.
Yep, you're right. And, you know, but, you know, credit Oklahoma's defense. I mean, it was a big factor in winning that game, and that was such a strong performance. You don't see too many shutouts in championship games. It was good to see, you know, it's good to see, you know, a dominant defensive performance.
And then you think about the points, almost giving up 25 points in one quarter. That right there, I mean, that was just that was a heartbreaker. You know, because you play tough for three quarters, and all of a sudden you give everything up. And I think it was in a 4 minute span. My notes say here, it was a 4 minute span that they put up 25 points, two turnovers,
is that right?
Two interceptions. I think if you go back on the game, I think let me go back on my notes here. But I think it was a four minute span, because it was 7-0 coming into the fourth quarter. Let me take my notes here. Yeah, exactly. So third quarter ended at 7-0, and then you started the fourth quarter. They put up another score with about 12 minutes left, and then at the 7-minute mark, let me see here. Yeah, 7-minute mark, it was 13-0 with 11 minutes left in the game, and then at the literally 5 minutes left in the game, let me see my notes here. Yeah, 5 minutes left in the game, they put up the remaining points. So they went from 13 minus 25, so there you go. So that was literally the two interceptions, I think it was, the returns for touchdowns. Within 7 to 5 minutes, about 4 minutes span, they just completely just took over the game. And it wasn't really – it was just KC, like you said, it was basically the turnovers, and that really cost them the game. So 25-0 was the victory for the Oklahoma City Lady Force. And we said that in general. We said if they couldn't contain Jeffries, and at this point it was basically more of a defensive win by OKC than anything.
Yeah, you know, I think in our pregame previews, you know, we weren't really, you know, looking at the Oklahoma City defense as a point scoring machine that it turned out to be there in the fourth quarter.
It was just impressive to see. It didn't hurt that Wilson was throwing drop bombs to him, you know what I mean? So it was kind of an air ball mentality. So that also helped them, you know, to just be ball hawks about it. So they took care of business, 25-0. So, Mark, what an impressive win. OKC finishes here. What a resume for them coming from the WXFL in, what, 5 seasons and previous to that, and now making a real statement in the WFA. And I said it last year, you know, when they were really riven up, that they this is a team that's going to probably move up to D2 if their roster maintains really well. Could be a competitive D2 team in the D2 realm coming next season.
Yeah, it could be. That'll be a very interesting addition to D2. Can you recall? I believe they played the Mahi Blaze this year, did they not? And I
yes,
think
they
it
did.
Was. Yeah, I think it was. Was it a competitive game? I think it was. You know, like maybe a couple scores, something like that, with the Blaze coming out on top.
I'd have to check Hostess, but I think you're right. I'm going to have to look right now because I don't recall, but I know it was – they did play Mile High Blaze. Let me double-check here. This we're looking at D3, right? D3. There you go. Someone's going to look it up right now. Mark, what do you say of the Karlstad Crusaders? No surprise here. We knew that they were going to be the top dog. You know, even Orbro probably wasn't going to be, you know, much of a match, and that's literally what it turned out to be. So – I don't think we're surprised that they've won their 5th championship in a row.
Yep. It was 28-0, so, you know, defensive shutout. The Crusaders putting up 28 points. And, you know, a couple weeks before, the Crusaders had just crushed the Black Knights 40-8. So this was no surprise. But... you know, certainly this is a testament to the excellence of the Karlstad Crusaders there over in Sweden. A really great job. Fifth in a row. You know, they led the whole league from start to finish. Only one team put up more points than them. That was the Arlanda Jets. But a bit of a softer schedule. But, you know, certainly very impressive performance by the Crusaders. And, you know, unfortunately for the Black Knights, they're playing second fiddle to the Crusaders again this year.
Yeah, and that's the way it is. You get the highlights right there, get the game recap as well. Shout out to Linda Johansson once again for being a champion, 5-time champion, I think, in the Sweden realm. So congratulations to Karlstad Crusaders. You get it on IG. Go to our IG page at Gridiron Beauties. Get all the winners right there from the WFA weekend, WNFC, plus the Sweden championship as well. So, Mark, you were thinking of last year when OKC took on Mile High, because this year they did not take on Mile High. I think it was Nebraska and Dallas Elite. But you're right. It was last year. So they took on Mile High last year, and they did play them very competitive. So this is it. This was a great win by them. What a force to be reckoned with here. We'll be surprised if they don't move to D2. I think they deserve to be in D2. Just going to depend on their numbers and they're able to maintain it. You know, overall, shutting down 2 points against Arizona, that was so impressive defense. Something we overlooked in terms of our preview, to your point, correctly. We didn't anticipate that they were going to be this good on defense as well. And so they proved it against the Savages with the shutout.
Yeah, congratulations to them, and maybe we'll see them in D2 next year. But, you know, WFA championships all wrapped up. You know, three good games to watch. They should all be on YouTube. I know the championship, the pro championship, might take a few days for it to be uploaded to YouTube for, you know, whatever contract reasons they have with ESPN. Mm-hmm. But that'll end up on YouTube at some point too. So we'll be able to watch them all again.
All right. Don't forget to go to the Hub, right, Mark? The best network on the planet is the Hub. That's where you want to be week to week. You get the lowdown on everything that's happening in the sport right there at Gridiron Beauties on Facebook. Everything that happened in Sweden, Germany, as well. We haven't talked about the German league yet, but we're going to dive into that next week. It's, I think, week 8 already in the German league, but we're just trying to focus on the States because that's where the majority of the action was happening right now in terms of major coverage. Looking forward to that as well. Also looking forward down to Mexico as the new season starts there as well. So we'll get you covered everywhere. Looking forward to the IFAB World Championships, Mark. That's going to be awesome. Football Canada, we just talked to Coach Claire Dorr, looking ready to get that gold as well. And so it's going to be an exciting, 3 weeks? We're almost 3 weeks out for the IFAB World Championships. So looking forward to see who's going to arrive in Vanta and who's going to make an impact on the world stage in terms of the IFAB Women's World Championship 2022. So, all right, Mark, what awesome guests. We had the quarterback, Michelle Angel of the X-League, Austin Sound in the house. We had Coach Claire, the legendary and pioneer of Football Canada. And, of course, your girl, MVP, Shantae Bonds, with the fourth consecutive championship of the Boston Renegades. What a podcast. 2 hours. Jam-packed.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. And, shout out to you, Oscar, for your masterful interviewing skills on display with three guests tonight. Outstanding work, my friend.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. But we do what we do, Mark. That's what we do. We do the best thing we do every week. We prep up for one day out of the week to spotlight the best athletes in women's American football, and we try to do our best to get them in here so that people are aware of them, right? That's what we want to. We want to spotlight the best of the best. Shantae Bonds, one of the best in terms of the world scene as well. You got Tuti Kusinen, Ruth Mata, a lot of players in terms of the WFA as well and the WNFC. So thanks again to Claire Dorr for making her time on a short notice. Really appreciate it, Claire, if you're listening through the podcast. And awesome job out in Canada. I really appreciate you doing all that efforts out there as well. So, Mark, that's it. The crew is not here. I think they're drunk for the weekend. It's that Lister and Mackenzie and Nate and Holly. I think they're all drinking based on the national championship. Yeah. They couldn't make it, but we made it because we're sober and happy.
That's right. Cream sodas only.
So we're keeping the ship afloat, right? Everybody else behind us is drunk, but we're maneuvering the wheel. We're good. We're not going to hit the Titanic. We're good to go. For the absent co-host that we have here, for the Oracle of Women's Tackle Football, Mark Simone. Oscar Lopes here, looking forward to 4:34 as we kind of prep up for the IFAB World Championships, Mark. That's going to be awesome next couple weeks as we get down to the final stage of 2022 in terms of a culmination on a world stage. That's awesome.
Yes, it's very exciting. Can't wait.
All right, guys. Don't forget to go to monkey95.com. Use the code NJF. Get ready for the NFL season. So for Mark Simone, Oscar Lopes saying have a great week. Congratulations to the WFA champions, OKC Lady Force, also the Mile High Blaze, and the Boston Renegades. So check out our stuff on our gallery on IG, and also don't forget to go to the Hub. Have a great night, everybody.
Site is the fastest growing daily fantasy sports site in America. You get fun, easy to play contests with cash prizes featuring your favorite players. Monkey Night Fight, daily fantasy sports for the rest of us. Sign up now and get an instant match on your first deposit up to $50.